Hi, everybody. Good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. We are here till 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. And coming up a little bit later on, it's Triple Play Thursday. So get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Text them in right now. Esmeralda is actually looking for a new place to live. She will be moving in a few months. And we're going to be talking about an amenity that that apartments are now offering here in Chicago. And we'll be talking about how houses have changed over the years. And there will also be a celebrity name game showdown between Esmeralda and myself this morning as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. That's all coming up on the show. So it is time for our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg, TV critic from The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Always a pleasure to talk TV with Dan, and let's welcome Dan to the show. Hello, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
How are you, sir?
I am a little bit fatigued, but I am well.
Okay, yes. And explain to everyone why you are a little fatigued. It's the TCA Winter Press Tour.
Yes, it is. It is finally over after two long and exhausting weeks of press conferences and promotional appearances and long interview things with various stars and executives and producers from all of these spring and early summer television shows. I am finally back on my couch, and my couch has missed me.
So. Well, welcome home. Tell everybody about this.
It is a thing that we do twice per year in the winter. In recent years, it has been in the Langham in Pasadena, and in the summer, it has been most recently at the luxurious Beverly Hilton Hotel in Beverly Hills. And it is one day after another of 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Press conferences and interview situations, and lots and lots of seeing clips and pilots and other things for new shows, and hearing the showrunners and the producers and the various stars try to predict either why the shows are going to be great or try to feebly justify why the shows are faulty and likely to suck. And it's a dog and pony show, and it involves entirely too much eating of hotel buffet food, which is sometimes good for a certain period of time and then a little bit awful after a while. Not the fault of the food, just the fault of the excess. And, yeah, minimal sleep. Probably have watched, certainly dozens, but probably hundreds of hours of television in the past few weeks just to prepare for that stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's one of the most important parts of the TV critic year.
Now, what can you spotlight some of the highlights, some of the things that you really enjoyed in terms of maybe shows that you're looking forward to or panels that were interesting?
I think there are a lot of interesting shows coming out this spring. I think that there are certainly a lot of uninteresting shows coming out this spring, but let's see, a few of the more interesting things that people can be looking forward to. Hulu may have its first sort of critical breakout hit with The Handmaid's Tale, the adaptation of the classic Margaret Atwood novel starring Elizabeth Moss, and the pilot, at least, is just a very, very good, beautifully made, well-acted pilot, dystopian, but future, except now it feels all too much like our current present.
Yeah.
It could hardly be more timely. And
I got to say, real quick on that topic, Dan, I screened Children of Men last week. That's exactly why, we sat in that theater and we watched the movie, and then afterwards everybody was like, oh my God, the film is set 10 years into the future, 2027. When it came out, it was set 20 years in the future, and it felt completely different at watching it last Tuesday. I swear, it was really crazy.
No, I completely believe that, and it is sad, and yeah, well, Handmaid's Tale. It's decades old and feels newer.
It's better than the movie they made in 1990, I would assume.
Certainly the first hour is, yes.
Okay.
It feels
okay.
Like this is a much better medium for it, and like this is a better realization of sort of the terrifying but also disturbingly prescient aspects of the novel. It's very promising.
And it's got my future ex-wife Elizabeth Moss in it, so right there.
who is so utterly charming, and on the press conference, everyone admitted that they like doing the show because they like getting to pretend to be best friends with Elizabeth Moss.
That's
so
great.
You know, who can blame them?
Exactly.
So that would be one thing that I would point to as being something that people can be looking forward to. Mm-hmm. What else? We watched an episode of the new season of The Americans, but that's something that people should already be looking forward to anyway. But right. On the other hand, we're a couple weeks away from FX's Legion, which I think that many people will be looking forward to. It is FX's first time dipping their toes in the Marvel Comics waters, but with Noah Hawley from Fargo as executive producer and director of the pilot, and it's trippy and weird, and the pilot in particular is marvelously directed, and I think that's something people are going to be into.
Now, and speaking of FX, I want to mention, Dan, can you tell me, have you seen Feud?
I have seen two episodes of Feud, the first two, and I was moving along that way as well. That is Ryan Murphy's latest time going down the rivers of the anthology. So it is, the first season is Betty versus Joan, that being Betty Davis and Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
And it talks about the production of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. And you have Jessica Lange as Joan Crawford and Susan Sarandon as Betty Davis and Stanley Tucci as Jack Warner, and just so many pieces of magnificent casting top to bottom. I don't know if it's going to prove to have sort of the depth that People versus OJ had, but in terms of just Hollywood scandal and fun and definitely criticism of industry's beauty standards and age standards and sexism, et cetera, I think that it has a ton of potential based on what I've seen.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. As soon as I heard about it and I saw the first sort of promo for it, obviously that's like a Ryan Murphy dream project, I would imagine.
Oh, so totally, and it fits perfectly with his style, and not in the way that People versus OJ did, where you were initially kind of cautious and you thought, okay, is he going to be able to reel it in? Well, there's absolutely no reason to be reeling it in on this. It is campy and excessive, but also nicely, smartly, cleverly done, and the performances, at least in the initial episodes, are terrific. I think it has a lot of potential. I'm looking forward to seeing more episodes, though, before I do a review, because, you never know with Ryan Murphy things. Sometimes they start strong and fizzle. OJ didn't, but I have good feelings about that one.
Okay, and when does that actually, when can people actually see that one?
That will be in March.
March.
March 5th, I believe.
Okay.
But it could be 7th, March 5th or 7th, one of those days, but it is March, and I think it's an 8 or 10 episodes, slightly shorter than a couple of his bigger series, but it will also presumably become an anthology where there will be future feuds in future seasons. So,
okay.
Could be fun.
Okay, great. I was looking at some of your tweets, you talk about one of the fate of one of the kittens from Keanu, and that involves Tiffany Haddish. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I can indeed. Tiffany Haddish, who some people will know from the Carmichael show, but she also she's voicing a sentient brain coral on an Animal Planet show that is hosted by Anthony Anderson. And she told us that she adopted one of the 8 kittens from Keanu. And turns out that the kittens, because kittens are sort of limited in their acting range,
right.
You could have each of 8 kittens with a different skill. And apparently the kitten that she adopted, its skill was reacting to gunshots, which is potentially problematic if you adopt a kitten, depending on where you live in Los Angeles. But yes, apparently she has 2 dogs, and she worried that the kitten was going to get along with the dogs, but apparently the kitten has been trained, or the dogs have been trained, or they've all been trained to get along well, and now they're all one big happy family, and the kitten from Keanu is probably not a kitten and probably not as cute anymore, but it was still a very cute story.
That's
that she
great. Did anybody ask her what she named him?
Yes, and I believe the name is something to the effect of Catonic, I think.
Oh. Okay. All right. Yeah, I love Tiffany Haddish. I think she's great. I think
she's fantastic. She and she's really busy. We had her on three different panels during press tours. So everything is coming up Tiffany Haddish.
Good for her. I've always liked her. Yeah, I've always liked her, and she kills on At Midnight. She's always kills on At Midnight. Okay, hang on, Dan. We got more TV to talk about.
Sure.
And Dan Feinberg is here, fresh back from the TCA Winter Press Tour. 14 days of nonstop previews and interviews, stars, panels, pilots, all kinds of cool stuff. And we'll talk more about that, plus regular TV talk as well. And we'll do that right after we take a break for the news here on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Hi, welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200. You can also text in your Triple Play Thursday request. One artist, three songs. One artist, three songs. Get them in now, 312-981-7200. A little bit later on, Esmeralda and I are going to go head-to-head in Celebrity Name Game, the radio version. And we are going to talk about how houses have changed and some new apartment stuff. That's all coming up a little bit later on the show. But right now, Dan Feinberg is with us for his biweekly visit. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And he is fresh from the TCA Winter Press Tour. We're back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much, Nick.
Now, was there anything else at the TCA that you wanted to touch on?
Oh, so many things. I'm trying to think of which things. I mean, we had a, for heaven's sakes, we had a panel for Baskets with Zach Galifianakis on Satellite.
Yes, and it comes back tonight.
It does indeed, and I've seen the first two episodes of the season, and they are very good. They are continuing along where we left things with Chip going on the road as a hobo, which
right.
is where last season left off, and things do not immediately return to normal is all that I will say. But when do things ever
right.
stay normal on Basket?
Right. So you had how'd that panel go?
It was very funny. It was Louie Anderson and why am I blanking on the actress's name? Help.
Oh yeah. I can't remember her name either.
Oh, no, that's horrible. We're awful. Anyway, they were there along with Jonathan Kreisel, the director and producer, and then Zach was...
Martha Kelly, Dan.
Yes, Martha Kelly.
Right.
I wanted to go with Martha, and then I'm like, wait, no, wasn't Martha the character on The Americans? And honestly, after 14 days,
sure.
all TV shows blend together, and it's all the same.
I gotcha.
But yeah, so Zach was via satellite. I think he's shooting Wrinkle in Time or something. So, but he talked about doing scenes back and forth and back and forth, sometimes in the same day as Chip and Dale, and that was funny because his two characters on Baskets, for those who don't know, are Chip and Dale Baskets. that was a terrific panel. Trying to think of other good things that the kids would be interested in out there. We had a panel today for an E! Show, which is about an actress who is hired to be the girlfriend and future wife of a Hollywood celebrity who's in a religious cult in Hollywood, and it's totally, totally, totally not about Tom Cruise, Katie Holmes, and Scientology. Several times that's not what that's about.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and we saw lots and lots of panels for movies that are being made into TV shows that mostly aren't very good because there's still more of that trend still to come.
Okay. All right. Since last we spoke, Dan, I finished Horace and Pete. When the last time we spoke, I was three episodes in, or I'd finished four episodes. I was four episodes in. And for those people who don't know, Horace and Pete was this show that Louis C.K. kind of sprang on everybody on his website about a year ago, right? Was it about a year ago?
Sounds about right now, yeah.
Yeah, and it was this show and what was it? Was like was it $3 an episode or something, or $5 an episode to order it?
It changed. It started off with one price because he wasn't really sure what he was doing or when he was doing it. The next couple of weeks, I think, dropped in price, and then it might have been $3.99 after that. Whatever it was, it might have been a different price for standard def versus HDE, and I only got as standard def because I didn't care that much. But it's on Hulu now, so
yeah.
Hulu.
Yes, so it's on Hulu, and so it was 10 episodes, and it's kind of hard to explain. It's about this family bar, this bar that's in Brooklyn that's been there for 100 years, run by siblings named Horace and or Pete for 100 years, and the current Horace and Pete that are running the bar are played by Louis C.K. and Steve Buscemi. And it's all these characters that wander in and out of the bar and this family situation. And it's a lot more complicated than what I'm describing is. I thought it was unbelievable. And I have to ask you this, Dan, because you watched it with a break in between each week, right?
I watched it with a break in between each week for several of the weeks, and then I think the last three or four episodes kind of backed up on me, and I watched them in a clump.
Oh, okay. Okay, because I was going to say, I watched the first four episodes, then I watched the middle two, and then the last four I watched back-to-back-to-back-to-back, and I thought maybe my reaction to it would have been a little bit different had I had a week to have a break in between those last four episodes, because I was devastated at the end of that 10th episode. I mean, I just was like beside myself.
Yeah, without spoiling anything for the listeners, it really does. It's a show that starts off where you think it's probably a comedy because of a lot of the people who are in it, and then it drags you along for a couple episodes being just funny enough so that you go, I guess it's kind of a comedy. And then by the end, it's very clearly a drama, and while it is still sometimes funny, it is a drama that gets pretty dark by the end, I would say.
Yeah, real dark. And I have to say that, as we talked about the last time, Dan, you were here, it's incredibly unusual project, not just in terms of how, Louis C.K., who I guess lost a ton of money on this thing, didn't he?
It all comes down to how you define loss. And how you define ton, and probably how you define money, too, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I think in the end, he is not going to have lost any money on this. I think he definitely did not make money right off the bat, and that's largely because he was determined to self-distribute it entirely. And that was his decision, and so the fact that he did not make money immediately, so it goes.
Yeah.
It was not a show that was cheap. The cast presumably worked at steep discount, but they didn't work for free because these people don't work for free. And, at any point at the beginning of the process of the show, he could have said to FX or to HBO or to Netflix or to anyone, I'm doing this thing. Will you give me the money to do it? And anyone would have given him the money to do it, and he didn't want to do that. So he didn't. He didn't make a huge amount of money from it up front. I assume probably when all is said and done, by the time it got a few Emmy nominations and whatnot, it was doing, if he lost some money, he lost some money. And then ultimately he sold the distribution rights to Hulu, and I assume ultimately he's fine. I can't imagine after this Hulu deal that he isn't right on Horace and Pete.
Well, it's unusual, and also the way it was shot. It shot like theater, the old television shows from the 50s where they would do live theater. It's shot on a soundstage. There's no laugh track, and it's played straight. It's more like a Eugene O'Neill piece than anything else. It's very very dramatic, and the acting is so great. And in the final episode, the first half of that final episode. Which I won't, give anything away, but it's a flashback. And I was kind of blown away by that. The second half is just unbelievable as well. But the first half of that episode, I think, was my favorite, besides the Laurie Metcalf episode. That first half of that episode, it might be my favorite thing of the whole show, and how it brought everything together. And, Louis C.K. got to do something that he normally doesn't do, which is, normally just doing a variation on Louis C.K., I thought it was amazing. I thought it was just absolutely amazing, an incredible piece of television, great in scope, and it proves that Louis C.K. is a very, very vital artist. There's just no question about it. I was devastated and blown away by it, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
Oh, for sure. And it is not like anything else that anyone is making on TV, and that includes the various things that Louis C.K. does that are also already – not like anything else anyone else is doing on TV, whether you count Louis, which we may again, who knows when, see another season of. Who knows? I still hold that hope. Mm-hmm. But also Better Things and Baskets, which he's producing, you know, he does a bunch of things that look like nothing else, and bless him for those things. And even in its, you know, I think that there are beats of Horace and Pete that didn't play perfectly for me, but they don't play perfectly for me because of the ambition of them. They don't, not because of something that was failed on a low swing. You know, I think that if it has any failures, it's a failure of ambition at times, going for something huge and, you know, coming close,
yeah,
and not perfectly nailing it. And I will always salute failures like that.
Yeah.
Any day.
You know, it's interesting to, I mean, and it's also populated with a lot of really great stand-up comedians who show up. Stephen Wright is in it. Nick DiPaolo is in it. And you got guys like Tom Noonan are in it. Amy Sedaris has an unbelievable appearance in the final episode that is just amazing. And then the regular cast, Edie Falco is so great in it. And, you know, Steve Buscemi is great. Jessica Lange is great. Adie Bryant, who I can't stand on SNL, I thought was wonderful as his daughter. Everything about Louis C.K. is great in it too, and again, you know, as you mentioned before, that Laurie Metcalf episode is just incredible. Just an incredible showcase for what a great actress she is, and I loved everything about it. And I'm gonna, you know, wait a little while before I revisit it because it just kind of, you know, gutted me. So, but it's amazing. It's on Hulu. It's 10 episodes. I can't recommend it highly enough. Horace and Pete, again, proving, you know, what an important artist Louis C.K. is.
So good stuff.
Yep. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is here, and we're talking TV. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we got more TV to talk about right after this on 720 WGN. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio here till 5 o'clock. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200 for your Triple Play Thursday request, 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg is with me. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots more TV to talk about. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, tell me about... Okay, I went to the movies, and I got there a little bit early, so I got to see Maria Menounos tell me about things. And they showed...
Always a good place to start.
Yeah, they showed a little sort of a preview of Riverdale, and it, you know, the latest from the CW. And I found it very unusual and very intriguing. Now, you have seen it. Tell everybody about Riverdale.
I have seen four episodes, and as the title suggests, it's the CW's dark spin on the Archie comics. What was your relationship with the Archie comics growing up, Nick?
They were. I was not a big, you know, I was never a comic book guy in general. I had a few Archie comics. I love Sugar Sugar, I was never a big Archie guy.
I always used to love the Archie comics at summer camp. That was where I used to read them. I never used to read them during the year, but at summer camp, I always used to go through every person in my cabin's various different Archie digests and double digests and all of that.
Right.
So I have my own personal affection for Archie going back to childhood.
Okay. But
it turns out that the Archie franchise has not been sort of in stone for all of these years. It was in stone or amber or whatever for about 30 or 40 years. But in the past decade, it was handed over to a TV and comic writer, Roberto Aguirre Sacasa. And there have been a lot of weird things happening in Archie over recent years. There were zombies. At some point, Archie was assassinated. Jughead came out as asexual. There were a lot of odd things that happened in the Archieverse, and that's kind of a way of leading into the fact that Riverdale is a strange series.
Let me ask you this. You were talking about some of the weird things that were happening in the Archie universe. Was Louis C.K. involved at one point?
The way that it was explained at press tour was that there were a lot of different variations on Archie that were pitched to the writers and producers of how to handle Archie as a TV project.
All right.
And Louis C.K. was never actually directly involved, but he was thrown out as kind of a hypothetical, here is a version of Archie you could do. And there was a time travel version that was suggested, apparently. There was a version involving wormholes or something, and there was some version that involved Louis C.K. as an older version of Archie, which, we just finished saying how we would pretty much trust Louis C.K. to do just about anything,
right.
and if anything includes playing an old version of Archie, then so be it, apparently.
Right.
That would be the way of testing our resolve.
Right. But that's not what this is.
No.
Okay.
This is not. This is really kind of Dawson's Creek meets Twin Peaks with Archie names.
Okay.
So Archie has spent the summer working at his father's construction business. His father, by the way, played by Luke Perry, because we're all old. Other parents on this show are played by the likes of Marisol Nichols, who some people will know, and Matt Shinamick is Betty Cooper's mother. So again, you're old. Jughead is played by the kid who, back in his tinier days, played Ross Geller's kid on Friends. So again, you're all old.
Right.
But yes, so there's a murder mystery in the background involving Cheryl and Jason Blossom, and the murder mystery spreads through all of the kids at Riverdale High, but there are other strange things happening in the town of Riverdale. And yeah, as I described it in my Hollywood Reporter review, it's kind of a dare of a TV show. It's like someone said, could you do Archie as a dark, twisted murder mystery, but still have Archie and Jughead and Moose and Reggie and Miss Grunby and all the various characters who read Archie enjoyed, but having them become kind of increasingly unattachable to those childhood images as it progresses. It's an odd show, but I kind of admired how totally committed and gung-ho it was to its oddness. I don't know that I would tell you that kind of in a vacuum it's a good show, and like if you're not being kind of amused by the silly gambit that's at work here, I don't know how amusing it is as a standalone. But if you kind of say, okay, I'm willing to go on this weird journey because I'm kind of amused by what they're doing, I think it's a lot of fun. But you have to go with it on the ride. If you don't, there's just no point.
Okay. Who's behind it?
Well, Greg Berlanti, who produces everything on TV.
Okay, I was going to say, yeah.
is the executive producer. But Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, who I mentioned, has been working on the Archie comics, is the creator of the show as well. So he brought his sensibility, and he'd worked on Glee and a number of other TV shows before this. So there's that. And it's directed by, the first two episodes are directed by Lee Tolan Krieger, who directed The Age of Adeline on the big screen, and Celeste and Jesse Forever, depending on which Sundance movies you want to associate him with.
Right.
And it's got a sort of nice dark, broody, evocative look to it. It's not a period show, and it's not set in whatever mythical sort of time period the Archie comics often used to be set in. And yeah, it's interesting. It's a crazy show, but the CW has had a lot of mid-season shows that were crazy in recent years that were also just awful. Like they had Cult, which was a dreadful show. They had The Messengers, that it was a dreadful show. This is better than those.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, and when does it debut?
It debuts on January 26th.
Oh, okay. So next
week. A week from now.
Okay, next week. Okay. So that's Riverdale. I found it to be, I was real intrigued by it. I thought it was, it sounds crazy to me, but I'll watch it. I'll definitely watch it.
Yeah. Just, you know, just don't take it too seriously. Have some amusement with what it's playing around with and don't take it too seriously.
Okay. All right, great. Hang on a second, okay, Dan?
For sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We'll take a break right now, and we got the news coming up, and then more with Dan coming up right after the break and the news. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WG. And by the way, you can follow Dan on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, and we'll be back after the news. Morning, everybody. How you doing? Welcome back to the show. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Hey, we are live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, overlooking beautiful Michigan Avenue. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. 5 a.m., you've got your opening bell with Steve Grzanich. And at 6, it's Steve Cochran with your morning drive. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Text as well. And also for your request for Triple Play Thursday, which will be coming up. One artist, three songs. You pick them. Triple Play Thursday, 312-981-7200. We're going to help Esmeralda out. She's looking for a new apartment. She's going to be moving in a little bit. We're going to talk about how houses have changed over the years, and Esmeralda and I will go head-to-head in another radio battle of Celebrity Name Game. That'll be coming up as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Check us out on Facebook. Facebook.com/NickDShow is the best way to stay connected. When you go to there, you will see a link to our guest, Dan Feinberg. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at TheFineprint, F-I-E-N. And we talk to him biweekly to talk about TV and all things television related. Welcome back, Dan.
Thanks. I remembered two things from Press Tour that I'm sure you're going to be interested in.
Okay.
First of all, we had a certain indie director, Mr. David Lynch, come out and talk to us for around 15 to 20 minutes about this new show he's doing, Twin Peaks or
What's
something?
It called? What is that? Yeah,
about Twine. I don't know, and I thought you might be interested in that.
I am, and I mean, you know, Showtime is now just running all the original episodes of Twin Peaks, and I've been rewatching some of them. And you know, I mean, that show, please, I still think that the pilot of Twin Peaks back in 1990 is one of the greatest things that's ever been aired on television to this day. And I love that series, and I can't wait for the new season in May on Showtime. So, what was David Lynch like?
He was exactly like David Lynch, especially since we haven't seen any of the show. But he came out and answered questions for 15 to 20 minutes. Sometimes he gave one word answers. Sometimes he gave short half sentence answers. He gave occasional winding, confusing answers that ultimately had nothing to do with anything when you looked in the transcripts. It was rather brilliant, and he sat up there and he seemed to be enjoying every second of it. It was rather glorious. And then some of the stars of the show, including Matt Shinamick and Kyle MacLachlan and Laura Dern, came out and also told us absolutely nothing except for talk about how wonderful it is to work with David Lynch, and how if you work with David Lynch, it's like a glorious, glorious cult that you never want to leave.
Right.
So that was pretty cool. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention that I'm sure you will also like, and also on Showtime, is I'm Dying Up Here, which is going to premiere in the summer. And it's a 1970s set Los Angeles comedy club scene.
Right.
Series from executive producer Jim Carrey, who doesn't appear.
Right.
But the first two episodes, which I've seen, are very good, and I am certain that that is going to be a show that is going to be on your radar.
Yeah, no, I've already read about it, and I can't wait. I can't wait to see it. It's going to be. I think it's going to be great. You get to talk to Ken Burns.
We had a panel with
panel,
him,
okay.
about the Vietnam War, which is not the Vietnam War itself, but his documentary, mm-hmm. The Vietnam War, which has been long in the making. And it was announced a couple days ago, days before the panel, that the Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross were doing the score for it, which is, of course, extremely interesting.
Yeah.
And also interesting because they finished the score a long time ago, and normally news doesn't work this way. They were brought in to start doing the scoring, I believe, 5 or 6 years ago, and somehow just no one thought to mention this in the press. And So we had a panel with Ken Burns, Lynn Novick, who's his co-director, and with Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. And it was very, very striking for Trent Reznor to be sitting on a panel in 2017 talking about how starstruck he was to be in a room with Ken Burns. not necessarily what you would have guessed about Trent Reznor, say, 25 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. You know? Yeah, that's true.
But no, apparently they asked, and Reznor and Ross were giddy, and they did 2+ hours of original scoring material for the series, and then a lot of that will, of course, be repeated throughout to create themes and whatnot. Uh-huh. But yeah, and that's another one that we've seen virtually none of. It's not premiering until September, but Ken Burns is one of those people who loves talking to the press. Lots of people do not, but you put Ken Burns in front of a room of reporters and he can hold court for hours. So he just talked to us about it now, and he'll be back in July to talk to us about it again.
All right. And now, is, I know there's some fans of Better Call Saul. Is Giancarlo Esposito coming back to Better Call Saul?
He is. It's unclear exactly when or for how much, but it, pretty much everyone knew from the, well, everyone knew because if you've seen Breaking Bad, you know that eventually he exists in that universe, and that's just a cool thing.
Yeah.
But it was teased in the last season finale that Gus Spring was going to be entering this world again, but it has yet to be exactly revealed when he's going to be coming this season, so I don't know, but AMC released a funny Los Pollos Hermanos commercial last week that actually played in late night TV in Albuquerque, which must have been a weird thing to see if you were, you know, if you're a Nighthawk and you happen to be half awake and suddenly, yeah, I don't even know how you respond if you see that. But yeah, they filmed the commercial, which was apparently Giancarlo Esposito's idea. They filmed it at the location. They had to stop production because a Breaking Bad tour came by the Los Pollos Hermanos location as they were shooting there.
That's great.
And it just aired on Albuquerque TV at like 2 or 3 in the morning, and no comment. And then yeah. And basically they put it up there knowing that somehow it would just make it onto Reddit because
yeah,
that's sort of the relationship that show has with the Reddit community.
Yeah.
A strange and amusing thing.
That's great. All right. Okay. I want to talk about a couple of things that I've seen. I've only seen one episode. I've only seen the first episode. I haven't watched the second one yet. It's on my DVR, but I've only seen the first episode of Taboo on FX with Tom Hardy. And I got to say, I'm really digging it. It's twisted and weird. But I'm digging it so far. Now, where do you stand on that?
I also have only seen one episode. It was reviewed by my colleague Tim Goodman for THR, so I didn't need to rush ahead and see it. And there were too many other things to watch. I don't dislike it. I just need to see where it goes from here. It's very glum and gloomy and mumbly and tortured. And to me, it felt a little bit like kind of an anthology version of the FX show from last year, Bastard Executioner.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they decided to do season 2 of an anthology of Bastard Executioner, it would look a lot like Taboo. And I don't know if that to me is necessarily a good thing. On the other hand, you know, I'm always interested in watching Tom Hardy mumble.
Yeah.
So I will definitely watch more of it. And, you know, it's got a great cast of people mumbling and slurring and being British around him. So
right.
I can get into it. I'm just not hooked.
Yeah.
I'm interested.
I think it's going to take some time because, I mean, to me, the first episode that I watched, it seemed like there was a lot of setup and a lot of exposition. I thought it was done in a very intriguing way and it looks great. So I was kind of sucked into it. But I really would imagine that by episode 4 is when things are going to start to I think, kind of take off and everything will be explained and everything can go forward. That's how it kind of feels to me.
Huh, that sounds like you have a lot of sort of faith going forward, whereas if things haven't become explained by episode 4, I may be out.
Yeah. All right. Considering I was looking at my DVR, the first episode was 80 minutes long. The second episode is 83 minutes long. So it's going to be like a movie every week. it's 83 minutes long with commercials. So
sure.
Yeah, okay. I'm on board, and I will say this, Dan, I'm on board with anything Tom Hardy does. Anything. I mean, even that stupid spy movie he made with what the hell was the name of that movie? This Means War. That was a horrible movie, but he's in it, so I watched it. So.
I think he is an extremely talented and interesting actor who sometimes makes questionable choices, but I'm perfectly happy to give this one a handful more episodes and hope that it hooks me more consistently.
Okay. All right. I just watched last night. I began watching the One Day at a Time Netflix reboot, and I'm four episodes in. I got to tell you, Dan, I think I love it. I got to tell you, I was charmed by the whole damn thing, from Gloria Estefan's new version of the theme song to everybody in the cast. And God, Rita Moreno. I mean, come on. I really like the idea of it. And you were spot on with your review, Dan, that it's got that, you know, it clearly is cut from the Norman Lear cloth. I mean, he's the executive producer of it. And it's more than just it's got your sitcom setup jokes, you know, and all that stuff. But there's a lot more going on. The social commentary that you expect from a Norman Lear production is there in spades. And I just think it's great. And I think Justina Machado is phenomenal in it.
So super. Because, you know, come on, Rita Moreno, we know.
Yeah.
She's Rita Moreno.
Yeah.
But yes, Justina Machado, getting this showcase is just so great for her. And I'm so happy for her and so happy people are liking it and liking her in it.
Yeah, she's great in it. And I think it's a smart reboot. And, you know, I mean, I was a fan of the original. It's a different, I mean, it's the setup is, you know, just the core setup is kind of the same. But, I think it's great. I think the kids are great. The girl who plays the best friend, like the gothy best friend, destroys me on the show. And Stephen Tobolowsky, who I believe is a national treasure, is tremendous as the doctor whom Machado works for, and that stuff is very funny. But there's a message in every episode, and there's some really sweet stuff. There's a great episode, my favorite so far. I've only seen the first four, and I'm going to watch the rest of them probably within the next week. But my favorite so far is the episode where Rita Moreno has a fight with Justina Machado, and she ends up leaving the house and is kind of gone for a while. And I thought that was a wonderful episode. There's a really funny scene that takes place in a church that I thought was, you know, just hysterical with the two of them. And the two of them together are great. They bounce off each other beautifully. I think it's terrific.
It is. And it does get better. The storylines, there's a nice build to several key storylines that I think are really well handled and very sensitively and funnily handled as well. It very rarely pushes sentiment so totally that things are not funny as well, and that's a good trait to have.
Yeah, and I like the way that they handled the Schneider character. I think the changes that they made and the guy that they cast, I think they did a nice job making that contemporary and still able to work. You know.
I think it is definitely a character who could be intolerable under other circumstances, and really, for the most part, is not.
Yeah.
And kudos to all involved.
Yeah, yeah, it's terrific. So it's streaming on Netflix right now, One Day at a Time, and we're going to try and get Stephen Tobolowsky to come back on the show to chat about it soon. So that's very cool. So you are back. Is there anything that you are going to catch up on now that you're back from the press tour?
Oh, if you could see my DVR right now, it's basically everything that's aired on TV in the past 2 weeks.
And how do you prioritize that? What's at the top? Let's hear what's at the top of Dan's list that you're going to watch.
At the start, since I got home tonight, I watched the election episode of Black-ish, which, if you haven't watched it, it's a terrific episode. It's one of the quote unquote very special episodes of Black, but just really just such a good episode. And then I watched last weekend's hour long episode of The Simpsons because. Yeah, honestly, how I'm prioritizing things is today my brain is a little bit mush, and so I'm doing half hours. But then probably over the weekend, I'm going to have to start digging into the meteor stuff. And then got plenty of screeners in my pile of screeners, too. So the TV never stops, Nick.
All right. And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks for more of it. Dan, thanks, man. I always appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure.
Okay, take care. Dan Feinberg, he's great. And we love talking TV with him. He's a terrific writer and a cool guy. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can read his stuff there, but you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we'll talk to him a couple of weeks from this morning. All right, we'll take a quick break. It's Nick DiGilio. That's right. That's my name on 720 WGN.